Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10, Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 51. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear King Yudhisthira, long, long ago in history, a demon known as Maya Danava, who was very expert in technical knowledge, reduced the reputation of Lord Shiva. In that situation, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, saved Lord Shiva. Purport. Lord Shiva is known as Mahadev, the most exalted demigod. Thus, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that although Lord Brahma did not know the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva could have known them. This historical incident proves that Lord Shiva derives power from Lord Krishna, the Param Brahman. So we read the story. Lord Maharaj Yudhisthira said, for what reason did the demon Maya Danava vanquish Lord Shiva's reputation? How did Lord Krishna save Lord Shiva and expand his reputation again? Kindly describe these incidents. Narada Muni said, when the demigods who were always powerful, by the mercy of Lord Krishna, fought with the Asuras were defeated, and therefore they took shelter of Maya Danava, the greatest of the demigods, of the demons. Maya Danava, the great leader of the demons, prepared three invisible residences and gave them to the demons. These dwellings resembled airplanes made of gold, silver, and iron, and they contained uncommon paraphernalia. My dear Lord Krishna, because of these three dwellings, the commanders of the demons remained invisible to the demigods. Taking advantage of this opportunity, the demons, remembering their former enmity, began to vanquish the three worlds, the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Thereafter, when the demons had begun to destroy the higher planetary systems, the rulers of those planets went to Lord Shiva, fully surrendered unto him, and said, dear Lord, we demigods living in the three worlds are about to be vanquished. We are your followers. Kindly save us. The most powerful and able Lord Shiva reassured them and said, do not be afraid. He then fixed his arrows to his bow and released them towards the three residences occupied by the demons. The arrows released by Lord Shiva appeared like fiery beams emanating from the sun globe and covered the three residential airplanes, which could then no longer be seen. Attacked by Lord Shiva's golden arrows, all the demoniac inhabitants of those three dwellings lost their lives and fell down. Then the great mystic Maya Danava dropped the demons into a nectarian well that he had created. Heard what? The Asuras are generally extremely powerful because of their mystic yogic power. However, as Lord Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 4:647, Yoginam api sarvesham magyatenantaratmana sharavan bhajate yomam sameyuktatamo mataha. Of all yogis, he always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. The actual purpose of mystic yoga is to concentrate one's attention fully on the personality of Godhead Krishna and always think of him. Madgatenantaratmana. To obtain such perfection, one must undergo a certain process, hatha yoga, and through this yoga system, the practitioner achieves some uncommon mystic power. The yogis, however, instead of becoming devotees of Krishna, utilize this mystic power for their personal sense gratification. Maya Danava, for example, is mentioned here as Mahayogi, a great mystic, but his business was to help the Asuras. Nowadays, we are actually seeing that there are some yogis who cater to the senses of the materialists, and there are imposters who advertise themselves as God. Maya Danava was such a person, a god among the demons, and he could perform some wonderful feats, one of which is described here. He He made a well filled with nectar and dipped the asuras into that nectarian well. This nectar was known as Mrita Sanjivitari, for it could bring a dead body to life. Mrita Sanjivitari is also an Ayurvedic preparation. It's a kind of liquor that invigorates even a person on the verge of death. Nama Om Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Prasthai Bhutai Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamne Namaste Sarasatam Deve Kauravani Vacharne Nirvisesa Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarne. This is a continuation of the understanding that by taking shelter of Lord Krishna, that one can surpass all the problems of material existence. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, he took shelter of Lord Nrsimhadev, and therefore, although he was faced with a seemingly insurmountable obstacle in his path of Krishna consciousness, namely his demoniac father, still Lord Krishna, he came and protected Prahlad Maharaj. As we heard, Prahlad Maharaj, his demoniac father, was asking, where did Prahlad get such power that he was able to even challenge his Asuric father, who even Prahlad Maharaj admitted was the greatest of the demons? Tat Sadu Manye Surya Varya Dehinam, O best of the demons. Prahlad answered that the same person who's supplying you with all your opulence and all your power is also giving me the power to challenge your authority. And here again, it is mentioned that even demigods such as Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, they also derive their power from Lord Vishnu. Because after all, even after the end of the Prahlad story or narration, we understand that Hiranyakashipu had derived his power from Brahma. And even Narada Muni, he was put into doubt when he was speaking to his father, Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma was instructing him. Narada Muni asked him, he said, my dear father, he said, you hold the whole universe in your hand just like someone holds within his hand a walnut. So if you hold a walnut in your hand, it's not very difficult to control it. Similarly, Lord Brahma is so powerful that the whole universe is compared to a walnut for him. He's controlling it so easily. And yet, he said that still I see that you're engaged in meditation on someone superior. And Lord Brahma then explained to Narada Muni how he himself was simply an instrument and that beyond him was Lord Vishnu. And even superior, of course, to Lord Brahma is Lord Shiva, who is Mahadev. Itas Shambhu. He's Shambhu, he's the Vikara Shesha Yoga. Just like if one takes some milk and adds some acid to it, then it turns into yogurt. So Lord Shambhu, Lord Shiva, he is practically as powerful as Lord Krishna. But here we'll find in this story that even Lord Shiva, he derives his power from Lord Vishnu. There are other stories mentioned, just like there's the story of Rikashura, which is further demonstrates Lord Shiva's subordinate position. How Vrikasura, a demon, he wanted to get some power. And so he inquired from Lord Shiva how he could get that power. Actually, he inquired from Narada Muni who he should worship. Narada Muni, realizing that this person is definitely a demon, he suggested better to worship Lord Shiva, who is very easily pleased. Because if you worship Lord Vishnu, because you're a demon, he'll probably never give you the benediction. He'll just be wasting your time. And if you worship Lord Brahma, then who knows? But if you worship Lord Shiva, then you'll definitely get whatever demoniac benediction you want. So he went to one secluded place, built a fire, And for 1 year he cut flesh from his body and threw it into the fire. Swaha. Swaha. So this is not the ordinary Vedic sacrifice. This is special demoniac sacrifice. Therefore, worship, Lord Brahma is generally worshipped by some kind of Vedic sacrifice. He's more of a standard demigod. But Lord Shiva, even after a year of offering his flesh into the sacrifice, Lord Shiva didn't seem to be so impressed. So finally he decided, well, all right, I'll make one last sacrifice and see what happens. So he decided that he'd offer his own head into the sacrifice, into the fire. And if nothing happened, then what could he do? So he bathed, just like before one offers an animal in sacrifice, then one bathes. So he bathed, took a nice bath, wanted to be clean for the sacrifice. And then he took his hair and his head, otherwise it's very difficult to cut your own head off and throw it into the fire. So he's hoping maybe after I cut my head off with whatever energy I got left, I'll just, hopefully the memento, my head will land in the fire. So he was holding his hair with his head. He took a big knife and was just about to cut his head off and swaha, perform his last sacrifice. So Lord Shiva thought, he had to give in. So he appeared and he touched the demon with his hand, and immediately all the missing pieces that were thrown into the fire came back again. And he asked him, well, he said, that if you just offer me a little bilver leaf and a little Ganges water, I become pleased. What is the need for such a, demoniac? It was such a horrible offering. So he said, all right, what do you want? He said, I just want one little benediction that whosever head I touch will immediately crack and the person will die. So Lord Shiva was perplexed because he knew the mentality of this demon. It wasn't difficult to figure out. So he said, all right, I'll give it to you. So he gave him the benediction and immediately he stepped forward to touch Lord Shiva's head because he wanted to kill Lord Shiva and steal his wife Gauri, Parvati. So Lord Shiva began to shiver in terror and fled. But wherever he went, somehow or another, the demigods were out somewhere, out to lunch, whatever. No one was around. It seemed like the word had spread, and bad news travels fast. And everyone, all the demigods decided that they weren't going to give Lord Shiva any protection. So finally he fled to Swetadweep, and there Lord Vishnu, he appeared as a little Brahmin boy with Rudraksha beads, a devotee of Lord Shiva, with Rudraksha beads and matted hair and locks and a danda and a deer skin. And Lord Shiva ran by, and then Vrikasura came and said, have you seen Lord Shiva? So Lord Vishnu said, my dear son of Shukuni, please do not run so fast. You are wearing your body out unnecessarily. And after all, the body is the only instrument by which we can fulfill the desires of the mind. Therefore, you have to take better care of your body or else you won't be able to fulfill your desires. Therefore, the demon thought, this must be a friend of my dad's, because he knows my father, Shukuni. Therefore, he thought he must be giving me good, and then he heard the advice, and every demon is very concerned about his body, especially about fulfilling his desires. So he thought, well, let me listen to him. Maybe he has something important to say. And then he said, well, what are you doing? He said, well, Lord Shiva is giving me this benediction, and I'm just running after him. I'm going to test it out. I'm going to touch his head and kill him, and then I'm going to steal his wife. So Lord Vishnu said, well, you didn't hear? He said, what? He said, well, Lord Shiva, he had a fight with his father-in-law, Daksha, and ever since that, he's been ghostly haunted. So he's been going out all over the universe and handing out false benedictions. So you can't believe him. Then the demon was a little doubtful. So Lord Vishnu, with his Maya potency, he said, my dear Vrikasura, what I think you should do is touch your head. And if it doesn't crack, then you should immediately go and kill this Lord Shiva, this imposter. So under the influence of the illusory energy, Vrikasura immediately touched his head, and the benediction did work. And his head cracked into hundreds of pieces, and he died. There's another example how even Lord Shiva, he has to take shelter of Lord Vishnu under certain circumstances. Actually, under all circumstances. There's so many stories how Arjuna, he tried to take shelter of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva. One Brahmin came in front of the palace of King Ugrasena, and he was saying that the kings and the rulers of this city, they're all imposters, that in the presence of a father, a child has died. So the king must be performing some kind of sinful activity. Because his Prabhupada writes that previously, even in Dwarpa Yuga, everything was so nicely arranged. That is, the kings were so pious, they performed so many sacrifices. They were so alert to the activities of their own citizens that even the weather was perfectly arranged. In other words, if sacrifices are performed, and if the citizens perform the prescribed duties and don't perform sinful activities, then the result is that the demigods, they provide all heat, light, rain, everything in their proper amounts at the proper time. Prabhupada said that previously, rain would only come at night when people were asleep. That is the normal thing, that rain should come at night, and during the day, the sun should come. But nowadays, we can see the results is that some places the rain never comes, and some places the rain never stops. So they're both due to impious activities, sinful activities. And what to speak that if a father's son died prematurely before the father did, that was considered quite a scandal. Nowadays, of course, the father sometimes is killed by the son, or the son kills the father. Therefore, you never know what's going to happen also. Therefore, he came and he was protesting. So, Arjuna heard this after so many protests. Seven of the Brahmin's children had disappeared. And Arjuna said, yes, I will protect you. So the Brahmin was doubtful. He said, Arjuna, how can you protect my children? Here, there is Lord Balaram in the city. Here, there's Lord Krishna. There's Pradumya and Aniruddha, his sons, and they can't protect my children. So how is it that you are going to protect them? So he said, no, you don't know who I am. I'm Arjuna. Lord Shiva, he was even impressed by me. He gave me this bow, the Gandiva, that I can even vanquish death personified if it was necessary. And he said, if I don't do it, I'll protect your children. And if I don't do it, then I'll enter into blazing fire and take my own life. So the Brahmin was a little impressed by that. He said, all right, you can protect him. And when the Brahmin's eighth child was being born, and he was crying in the maternity house, and Arjuna came, and he equipped himself with the Gandiva bow, and he started to chant mantras to Lord Shiva. But lo and behold, the child, he suddenly disappeared into the air, along with Arjuna's bow and arrows. So that was quite embarrassing for Arjuna. And it also showed how that even Lord Shiva was not able to do anything. Even his potency was not capable of even saving the child. So Lord Arjuna decided he'd enter into the blazing fire. And Lord Krishna stopped him, saying that this would be a mark on him, it would give him a bad reputation, that his own friend he couldn't save. Then he took a chariot. He called for his chariot and all the four famous horses, all different colors, Megapushpa, Shaiva, they all came. And then he took Arjuna to the spiritual world. And there they saw Mahavishnu, who gave back the children. That was another example of how Lord Shiva couldn't protect his devotee. And even we see so many cases, actually, time and time again, we find that Lord Ramachandra, sometimes they say Lord Ramachandra was the devotee of Lord Shiva because he worshipped him, therefore he was subordinate. But we also find that when Ravana was being killed by Lord Ramachandra, and he was praying to Lord Shiva, please come and protect me. And Parvati was saying, my dear Lord Shiva, why don't you go and protect your devotee? He's calling for you. But Lord Shiva said, it's useless. He's finished. Lord Ramachandra is going to kill him. I can't do a thing. It's useless, he's calling for me. And we find when finally there's a showdown between Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, when Lord Shiva did come to try to protect his devotee, Banasura, then the result is that he got defeated in so many different ways. He tried to defeat Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, throwing a mountain weapon, it was countered by another. He threw a hurricane weapon, Lord Vishnu counteracted it with a mountain weapon. So many weapons were being thrown. Finally, he threw the Shiva Dwara, which produces unlimited heat. But when Lord Krishna threw the Narayan Dwara and everything froze, then even the Shiva Dwara began to freeze. It says that if there's unlimited heat, if it becomes very hot, then one can somehow or another tolerate it. But when one becomes very cold, it's not tolerable. Therefore, Shiva Dwara, he surrendered and he offered prayers to the Narayan Dwara and to Lord Krishna. And then Lord Shiva, he left the battle. Of course, before that, he also, Lord Vishnu, threw the yawning weapon. So he was on the battle and just simply yawning all the time. So he couldn't do very much. And then finally, when Banasura attacked Lord Krishna, then Lord Krishna, with his, he had 1,000 arms. And therefore, he came with his 1,000 arms, throwing all his weapons, just like water through a sieve. So many weapons were coming. And Lord Krishna just counteracted them with his Sudarshan Chakra, destroyed all the weapons and cut off all of his arms but two of them. Actually, four of them, I guess. He left him four arms. And Lord Shiva couldn't do anything. All he could do was pray to Lord Vishnu, please don't kill my devotee. And because he was a descendant of Prahlad Maharaj, Lord Krishna had made that promise he wouldn't kill his descendants. Therefore, he saved Banasura. And here again, the demons, they're about to kill the demigods. And Lord Shiva can't do anything. We'll find out that he's defeated. Mayadhanava is such a powerful asura. But still, he takes shelter of Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu will save him. Therefore, the whole purpose for it is that one should take shelter of Lord Vishnu and fix one's mind upon Lord Vishnu. Here is Yoginam Api Sarvesham Maggatan Antaratmana. Shadavam Bhajate Yomam Sameyuktatamo Mataha. The whole material world is the practice for leaving the material body. Our material existence is so we can practice, so at the time of death, we can obtain a real shelter. It is said that yam yam vapi smaram bhavam pya jant yantikalevram tam tam e vaiti konteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. That whatever one thinks of at the time of death, he's sure to attain that next state of existence. And if we practice in this lifetime to think of Krishna, then we get a real existence. We get a permanent abode, a place with unlimited happiness, no problems. And if not, if we take shelter of someone else, even Lord Shiva, then we only get a temporary place, problems, and struggling hard in this material world. Therefore, we have to find out to whom to take shelter. And these all are meant to show us, take shelter of Lord Vishnu and practice putting one's mind upon Krishna. And it said, Mayaya Shakta Manat Parata Yogam Yunjan Manashraya. In the three modes of material nature, we are bewildered who to actually take shelter of, what to think about. The mind is always presenting different objects, different ideas for us to take shelter of, to obtain, to be, try to become aware of, so we can derive some pleasure. But it is recommended, Mayaya Shakta, put the mind on Krishna. And that is Tatshinu, it is recommended through the process of hearing. By hearing about Krishna, then it is possible to put the mind upon Krishna. There's no other process of doing it, especially in this age. The yogis, they undergo great austerities, practicing yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, and finally samadhi, where they have the power, the potency, the ability to put their minds upon Vishnu. But even after putting their minds upon Vishnu, then they still have to do something. Therefore, either they recognize the fact that they're Lord Krishna's servants and they begin the process of devotional service, they're fortunate enough to come in contact with a devotee and understand who they actually are, or they think, well, here's me. I think I must be seeing myself. I didn't realize how nice I look. And then what they do is they want to merge into what they think is themselves. They merge into Lord Paramatma's body, spiritual body. Therefore, devotional service is recommended because it's the easiest method. After so much trouble and so much austerities to come to the platform of putting one's mind upon Lord Krishna in the form of Paramatma within the heart, trying to give up material attachments, struggling, just like when we're chanting japa, the mind is wandering. So it is not that the yogi, that he sits there and suddenly Krishna appears within his heart. It takes hundreds of births of practicing, struggling, being deviated, failures, so many different obstacles. Then finally, one day, Vishnu may appear for a moment, and then again, so many bursts of obstacles and struggling. So Prabhupada said, I've seen by my practical experience that so many yogis on the Ganges, they're sitting there in meditation, trying to meditate, but actually they're practicing pranayama. So it is not that to practice yoga is so easy to realize Vishnu. And yet in this age, simply by the process of hearing, one can gradually understand Krishna, gradually realize Krishna. The same perfection that can be obtained after so many births, as Krishna says, bonam janmanamante, gyanamam mam prabhajite, vasudeva sarvamiti, sura mahatma sudura labaha. This is after births of cultivating knowledge. What to speak of just doing the physical exercises, which are considered to be just like fruitive activities. The actual knowledge comes in a much later stage of yoga. One is actually even considered to be, has some knowledge, some gyan. After so many births of such activities, then one realizes Krishna is God. But a devotee, he can simply come to the temple, and despite the fact that he can't perform such great austerities, still he immediately understands here is Vishnu. Here's Paramatma. I've been trying to find him for thousands of years, and here he is right in the temple. I could have walked down the street and seen him, instead of simply sitting in my little hut trying to meditate on him. That we may come in here and see Lord Krishna thinking, you know, who is this statue? And Radha Gopinath are thinking, who this poor person? We're thinking, who is this statue? And he's thinking, who is this poor soul who's come here in bewilderment? But somehow or another, by coming in contact with Krishna, then one can actually begin the process of going back to the spiritual world. One gets the greatest opportunity, especially hearing, Tatshinu. Prabhupada says that no one could be a greater authority than Vishnu by the Lord Krishna, and therefore by hearing from him, one gets the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna conscious person. Therefore, one should begin yoga practices directed in the last verse in the sixth chapter. Steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which hearing is the most important. Therefore, Lord Krishna says, touch Shinu. If we can simply agree to hear about Krishna and no one else, then one will become very rapidly Krishna conscious. We're constantly hearing, just like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, for his harmonist, when someone would present an article, he would simply ask, how many times has he said Krishna or Chaitanya? So if he said Krishna or Chaitanya enough times, then he said, all right, you can print it. Or if we look at Prabhupada's purports, Srila Prabhupada's purports, where it's simply Krishna, every other word is Krishna. Prabhupada's idea was, even people can't understand what the purport is, simply they're hearing Krishna, they're becoming benefit. And one day, hearing Krishna, hearing about Krishna, then one day they'll begin to realize that Krishna, this Krishna has a form. He has a flute and a peacock feather. He has eyes like lotus flowers. He's surrounded by calves and cows, cowherd boys. He has Chintamani stones in his backyard, and he has so many Sarabi cows. Then one will begin to think about these things, about what he's heard, and the result is that one will actually get some taste for hearing about Krishna. And imperceptibly, one will become free from this tendency, this desire to lord it over the material nature, and therefore become purified within one's heart, and develop the desire to utilize the things in the material world for Krishna's mission. So by taking shelter of Krishna through this process of hearing, then one day one will give up these false shelters, Dharashayaye Bahi Artamanina, this idea that there's something in the material world which is more desirable than Krishna. And the result of doing that is that one day one will constantly think of Krishna, the mind will become attached to Krishna, Asakta Manat Parata, Yogam Yunjan Maharaj, Asam Shayam, Samagramam. And then there will be no more doubts. Everything will be clear, clearly understood. Everything will become very simple and clear. But the asuras, they have no desire to think of Krishna in the same way that a devotee does. They put their minds upon Krishna in the form of austerities, penances, etc. But it's simply to dominate the material world even more than previously they did. A simple karmi or a vikarmi, he struggles to dominate the material nature, but he's generally unsuccessful and then he has to leave his body. But the real asuras, they learn how to develop mystic powers. We find that when Krishna came 5,000 years ago, they weren't just ordinary asuras who came and attacked him. It wasn't that Krishna was walking down the street and someone, you know, with a blackjack came out and tried to mug him. And then ordinary asuras couldn't even come close to Krishna. He wouldn't even touch the ordinary asuras like Kaliyavana. Kaliyavana was born of Gargamuni. Gargamuni, it seems, he was taunted one day by the members of the Yadu dynasty, and he became quite upset, and he decided he'd get revenge. Therefore, he underwent austerities and penances, and he got the benediction by having a child by a Yavana lady, a princess, a Yavana princess. He would get a son who would become very dangerous to the Yadu dynasty. Therefore, he had a son named Kalyavana who was going all around the world, challenging all the kings and vanquishing him. Because there's a lot of Yavanas. And then one day he heard from Narada Muni that the greatest dynasty is in Mathura and that he should go and attack that dynasty. So he went with his 33 million Yavana soldiers, and at the same time Jarasandha was attacking with his 18 Akshohini divisions. And Krishna was in quite a dilemma, and he came out But he wouldn't even fight with Kalyavana. He thought, I don't want to even touch the person. If I fight with him, he might touch me, and then that won't be very good. So he simply walked out of the city in his form with his form of Narayan, and he led Muchukunda, he led him to a cave, because Kalyavana, he got down from his chariot. He wanted to be fair about the fight. And he followed Lord Krishna to a cave, and in the cave there was Muchukunda, who was sleeping, and he kicked Muchukunda. It's quite an offense. So Muchukunda, he woke up, and he was so angry that from his eyes a flame came and burnt Kalyavana to ashes. So this is called, sometimes they say killing two birds with the same stone. They say in Bengali, though, going to the Rath Yatra and selling your bananas on the way, accomplishing two purposes at the same time. But the idea is that Krishna didn't even want to touch such a demoniac person. On the other hand, so many demons came, and they weren't ordinary demons, Trinavarta. An ordinary demon can become a whirlwind, a tornado. An ordinary demon can appear as a very beautiful lady, and then suddenly after she dies, become 27 miles long. Every demon had some special quality. Agasura became a snake and swallowed all the cowherd boys. So all these demons had mystic powers because they engaged in quite a bit of practice, austerities and penances, to obtain these mystic powers. But still, ultimately, they were all killed by Krishna. Even the biggest demons, they ultimately will be vanquished by Krishna in the form of time. As he winds up the universe, all of them get gobbled up in his universal form. So the conclusion is that even one knows all these Vedic sciences here, Maya Dhanava, he knows the science of how to bring a dead body to life. He knows the Ayurvedic preparation. Mrita Sanjeeva Tari. Sanjeeva Yitari. But still, he'll be vanquished by Krishna. And ultimately, even the demigods, the demons, everything is ultimately wound up, because everyone in the material world, whether he be a demigod or a demon, is ultimately has some percentage of demoniac qualities within him. Even so-called demigods, they're also wanting to lord it over the material universe. Therefore, ultimately, everything becomes vanquished. And the conclusion is that one must take shelter of Krishna if he wants his real benefit. Although the mind has a tendency to tell us so many other things to take shelter of, and because of our long-standing attachments for these things, our taste, just like the crow, he has a taste. If you spit, then immediately he'll jump into the air very excitedly and gobble it up. Or the pig, he eats stool. Something that if we even get in the air, we become very disgusted. But the pig becomes very enlivened. We can understand that these are not very nice tastes, but we also have a taste for similar things. It's just according to the body and the mind and the mentality, one has a taste for certain types of sense gratification. But ultimately, if one develops Krishna consciousness, then one can understand what the real taste is, and gradually our attachments to these tastes in the material world, they'll gradually diminish, and we'll become free from these attachments, which are ultimately forming our next material body. It's all like a big machine, the material world. It's as soon as Krishna senses, as soon as you get a little, just like they sometimes they have these light machines, as soon as you get a little close to it, a sensor goes off and the door opens or something happens, or you can. So similarly, Krishna is so sensitive, he knows exactly what we want. And he's recording everything. And through the demigods, our next body is being put together. Unless one becomes a devotee and fully surrenders to Krishna, fully puts his mind upon Krishna, which takes a lot of practice. And in that way, one gets automatically the opportunity to give up all other desire. Therefore, we should try to take the express back to Krishna Loka, avoid the local stops in so many places, and that way become actually benefited. Besides that, nowadays, if you take a train in most places, it's very dangerous. You never know if you're going to wind up in your final destination. We'll stop there. Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
You mentioned that Shiva's spirit of Brahman,
yeah, he was born from there. At the beginning of creation, Lord Brahma created the four Kumaras and told them that they should get married. So they didn't want to get married. So Lord Brahma, he was insulted. I'm giving you this order, you don't want to follow it. So he became angry. And he was about to, so his anger was checked by his intelligence. But still, it was so great, his anger, that it came out from between his eyes as Lord Shiva. Sometimes it is said that Lord Shiva is born different ways. In this particular millennium that I was mentioning, that he came out through the eyebrows. Therefore, he's considered the son of Lord Brahma. But still, he is much more powerful than Lord Brahma is. When Lord Brahma contemplated his daughter, then Lord Shiva ran after him to kill him with his trident. So Lord Shiva is much more powerful than Lord Brahma. Although sometimes the son is more powerful than the father. Because after all, Lord Brahma is, although he's an incarnation, qualitative incarnation, one of the qualities, still Lord Shiva is practically, he's directly Lord Vishnu. He's just a little, he's transformed because of his contact with the material energy. But still, he's directly potency of Lord Krishna. Just not exactly Swangsa, but he's not Divinangsa either. He's Shiva, he has his own tattva. When I was reading the other day that even Rudra, when he's praying, when the Prachetas came to perform austerities, Lord Shiva, he started to give different prayers that had been previously offered. So he was praying to Lord Vishnu to protect him from the Rudras. So there is 11 Rudras, and Lord Shiva that was praying was one of them. So in this universe there are 11 different Rudras or Lord Shivas. And even one Lord Shiva is afraid of the other ones. So even if you become Lord Shiva, still there's other Lord Shivas who take care of you. You don't step out of line. All right. Thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.